From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM next hour, the world through the eyes of Alex Jones. Get ready for that. Well, those of you who are prescribed inhalers for serious lung disease, you might be at risk of deadly heart problems, according to researchers. Trials on more than 15,000 patients found that inhaled drugs increase the risk of heart attack, stroke, cardiovascular disease, and death by 58%. The drugs now are called Atrovent and Spriva. They open up the airways to help patients with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease to breathe. The work is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. If you're taking these drugs and if you've got inhalers, call your doctor, talk with him about it or her. Far too few Americans get their flu shots each winter, and the government is warning as it calls for a record number to line up for inoculations this year, including 30 million more school-aged children. This year promises an ample vaccine supply. They say about 143 million to 146 million doses, more than ever before manufactured. They want you to get the shot. Add up everyone that the CDC recommends get vaccinated. That's 261 million Americans qualifying. Last year, they say, just 113 million of the 140 million doses produced were used. New CDC data released today show that a fraction of those at highest risk from influenza seasonal march across the country get protected. Flu kills about 36,000 Americans a year. 200,000 rush to the hospital. You make your own decision about your own vaccines. Fluoridation puts tea drinkers at risk of damaged bones, discolored teeth, and soft tissue. Tea has naturally high fluoride levels, and they say excess fluoride can weaken bones and discolor children's teeth, especially. President Bush warning of the danger of a long and painful recession, urging Congress to pass his administration's economic rescue package in a very rare address to the nation Wednesday night. Mr. Bush said the $700 million rescue package is not aimed at saving any one financial institution, but rather at preserving America's economy. He cast the need for the package in personal terms, warning you that your home values, your retirement accounts, and your personal businesses could be at risk if the economy continues to spiral. Many people reacted overnight to this, and they weren't too happy with this, calling it threats. The proposed $700 billion bailout plan, in its original form, has faced strong opposition on Capitol Hill this week. Congress seemed to open to a less costly plan as Democrats won a key concession from the White House, which agreed to limit the pay packages of Wall Street executives. Why pay them at all? Congress offering up a menu grilled the regulators, raking Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke over the coals as they questioned this $700 billion plan to bail out the financial institutions. Paulson and Bernanke struggled to justify the massive expenditure of your money as legislators grew increasingly aggressive in their rolling interrogation. One of the nation's largest car dealerships, closing its sales operation, possibly forever, Bill Hurd Enterprises. They've got 13 dealerships across the country. They're based out of Columbus, Georgia. They basically say, you know what, business is bad. What else can we do? In a moment, Andy Goss joins us. He's a monetary historian. He's going to react to all this. Four Texas elementary school students are being tested for HIV and other blood-borne diseases after a student found a heroin needle at recess, poked herself and three other students with this. A student at the elementary school thought it was a fake, so she went around poking herself and kids. The feature story on the coasttocoastam.com website. Return to Galveston, Texas. Some residents are returning to the city now for the first time since Hurricane Ike. The pictures there in the associated video and slideshow that you'll find on the website, absolutely compelling. What devastation. I mean, just huge. The solar wind, the stream of charged particles billowing away from the sun, they say, is at its weakest for 50 years. Scientists made the assessment after studying 18 years of data from the Ulysses satellite, which has sampled the space environment all around our star. They expect the reduced output to have effects right across the solar system. And China set to launch its third manned mission into space Thursday. Three Chinese taikonauts are slated to lift off. The historic mission is set to include the nation's first spacewalk. Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor, head of the EnterpriseMission.com, best-selling author of the book Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, is on the line with us to react. Here they go, Richard.
Good evening, George.
Hi, my friend.
You and I have been talking about this since 2003.
Yes.
When they first launched their first taikonaut, which is the Chinese term for astronauts. We actually have two major stories on space out of China tonight. They're on the EnterpriseMission.com website for people that have access to the web. The first, of course, is this new mission. This is the progression of the Chinese space program following very faithfully, although at an accelerated pace, the U.S. space program.
Absolutely. They seem to be patterning it exactly, but like you said, it's accelerated.
Well, because they've got the benefit of all the stuff that we learned and the Russians learned, and so they don't have to repeat the same mistakes.
Well, and they don't have 1960 technology. Richard.
That's also true, and they have done a Chinese version of the Soviet Soyuz spacecraft, so it's really not even a duplicate of the Russian craft that everybody thinks it is. You and I have also discussed something, and in fact, a good friend of mine, who is a libertarian candidate for Congress in Utah, and I discussed this at the Libertarian Convention when I was up there speaking, he believes that, like I do, that they're going to strike out for the moon a lot sooner than 2017.
I would believe that.
That with this mission, which is the equivalent of an Apollo spacecraft, including spacewalks, they will have all the things they need under their belt for in the next couple, 3 years, maybe by 2012, to go to the moon and duplicate what we did with Apollo 8. And, of course, that leads into the second story, because if you go and read that second story, they have announced that they are developing a remarkable non-reaction, fuel-less space drive. They didn't invent it. It comes from Britain. And, of course, the British scientists are furious and say it can't work. It violates Newton. It violates Einstein. It can't work. We had a U.S. company who apparently also looked into it and rejected it. But the Chinese tonight are developing it. And so, as the headline says at the top of Enterprise, a new space race is being born even as we watch.
Here we go. Richard, thanks so much. Richard Hoagland, of course, also has a website, darkmission.net. He pops in once in a while to update us on some important breaking science stories. Listen to this story. You talk about one of the cruelest stories I've heard in a long time. Malicious thieves broke into a Georgia home of a 10-year-old cancer patient. They stole his new puppy. Even worse, according to detectives, they think the culprits knew the little boy, that they were aware that he was sick. He was diagnosed with cancer 4 years ago. He's been battling the illness ever since. For his 10th birthday in July, his parents bought him a little miniature Dachshund to cheer him up. He named her Dixie, and they took him away. David Blaine, well, there's a lot of tension going on now in New York. You know, he's been hanging upside down for 60 hours. I think he's down now. And he wasn't supposed to move around. He's supposed to stay upside down for 60 hours. Well, some New Yorkers spotted him, apparently, getting checked by doctors, drinking through a straw, sitting up, sort of. And they call the whole thing rubbish, quite frankly. We'll find out a little bit more tomorrow morning on David Blaine's The Magician and the self-described endurance artist. We'll just see what the take is on that. In a moment, Andy Gauss joins us. He's a very respected monetary historian. We're going to talk about this mess we seem to be in. Maybe Andy can shed some light for us. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. My friend Johnny Rose in St. Louis had just heard Andy Gauss yesterday on McGraw-Milhaven's KTRS talk show and said, George, you've got to get Andy on the program. So we react quickly, and here he is. Andy's one of the most respected monetary historians and contemporary experts on the American and international banking systems, tremendously understanding our monetary and economic systems, attracting a wide following, over 1,000 television and radio appearances. Andy publishes a newsletter. He has authored several books. His website linked up at Coast coasttocoastam.com. Here he is. Andy, how are you, my friend?
Well, hello, George.
Good to have you on.
It's an honor to be here.
You know, this mess, you know, tonight, you know, we heard the president's address, yet the reaction has been extremely negative. Even on most of the Republican end, they don't want this bailout the way it is. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't want it the way it is either. I mean, who could? We virtually create a fourth branch of government in the Secretary of the Treasury.
Absolutely.
Give him the authority to spend virtually unlimited amounts of money in any way he sees fit without judicial review and without oversight by any one person.
I didn't care for what I thought might have been fear tactics from his announcement tonight.
That's all I saw was, you better do this or it's going to be the end of the world as we know it. I think this type of pressure has no place in lawmaking, for sure.
So here we are, Congress battling this out. They may even have to battle it out through the weekend. John McCain wanting to cancel his debate with Barack Obama, stopping his campaign because he's so concerned about it. This situation, Andy, to me, smacks of greed on Wall Street, and they're asking us to pay them for it.
Precisely correct. You know, the Federal Reserve allowed the Wall Street banks led by Goldman Sachs to create some $45 trillion worth of obligations that are due and payable. Everything from municipal bonds to auto loans to home mortgages to commercial paper to, most importantly, loans to hedge funds and other gambling entities. And they did so knowing full well that there was a money supply limited at $14 trillion. So it's almost like they created or allowed the creation of $3 worth of debt for every dollar in existence.
Andy, why have they all collapsed? I mean, these bundled mortgages, subprime especially, surely all these people who have mortgages haven't gone under, been foreclosed on. So why are all these places collapsing? I don't understand.
It's because, again, they allowed for the creation of $3 worth of debt for every dollar in existence. You know, they asked J.P. Morgan the question, what caused the panic of 1907? And he said, somebody asked for a dollar. You know, one of the depositors asked for his money back. Our system was so leveraged, leverage being the prime tool which these guys use to amplify their gains, that the BIS had just finished reporting a notional derivatives position of nearly $600 trillion, or, you know, virtually 50 times the amount of money in existence. This type of leverage cannot exist without some underlying base. And, you know, with that much leverage, if just, 5% of the people or 4% of the people withdrew their money, it takes out the root of the entire structure. And that's essentially what happened. As the Fed started to contract credit in an attempt to combat the obvious inflation that was coming, they were raising interest rates. That sent the thing into a snowball-type, you know, downhill move that has been unable to be stopped.
Could anybody in government, could any of them have seen this? Or did they know it and just keep quiet about it?
Well, I want to say a combination of the two. I note that in my last newsletter entitled The Other Shoe, in which I talked about this coming crisis, I pointed directly at the removal of the Smoot-Hawley, excuse me, that was a Freudian slip. I pointed to the Glass-Steagall legislation from 1934. You know, when we looked at the crash of 29 at a congressional level, they determined that the main cause of the crash was that the nation's investment banks had gathered up the commercial deposits of America's workers and then used them to gamble or plunge in the stock market. Having taken severe losses, they were unable to now return the money to the depositors. And so we established a wall between the commercial banks and the investment banks. We told the banks, make a choice. You're either a commercial bank, which gathers deposits and makes loans under very strictly regulated conditions, or you're an investment bank, and more recently a hedge fund, which takes money from rich people, borrows money, and gambles wildly without any regulation. And as long as those two were separate, then one had no danger of threatening the other. But right as Mr. Clinton was leaving office, the Congress dismantled this regulation under extreme lobbying pressure from the owners of the Federal Reserve banks, they removed this prohibition, and as a result, the commercial banks merged willy-nilly with the investment banks and started allowing hedge funds and investment banks to borrow the depositors' money from the commercial banks. So that's what caused this crash that we're engaged in right now.
Why is Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, and President Bush so insistent on this $700 billion free bailout, basically, when so many other people, Democrats and Republicans alike, don't like it?
Well, remember that Henry Paulson is the former chairman of Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs invented many of the instruments that are under duress right now. So the collateralized debt obligations, the CDOs, more importantly, the credit default swaps, these were an invention, and many under the tutelage of Mr. Paulson himself.
Ah, isn't that interesting?
So it, just like the Mexican bailout in which Robert Rubin came before Congress and said, you know, if you don't give the Mexicans money, it's going to cause a crisis. It would have caused a crisis for the firm of Goldman Sachs. And so this current situation, you will note that Goldman Sachs recently applied for a commercial bank charter. Virtually overnight, this was granted. And now you watch, Goldman Sachs will be the very first person online at Mr. Paulson's desk to get their share of the $700 billion.
You know, if you continue to borrow and borrow and borrow, and let's assume you don't have the cash flow to support that debt, you got a problem.
That's a deflationary depression, because ultimately you end up owing more than you have available in cash.
All right. Now, in this situation, the $1 trillion for Iraq, the $700 billion for this, the $85 billion for AIG, where's the cash coming from to service the interest or the debt?
Well, and this is the key to the question, because as I've said many times in the past, as long as you expand the supply of money at the same rate that you're expanding the supply of debt, then the two are in harmony. There's always enough money to pay off every claim on debt.
Even though it's smoke and mirrors.
Exactly. All it is more zeros. You know, you make $100 a week, you owe $1,000, and now you make $1,000 a week, you owe $10,000, and it just continues to grow in that fashion. The current situation is different, however, because the contraction in the money supply combined with the explosion in the creation of debt instruments, and this is the real key, that the Federal Reserve does not regulate the creation of these debt instruments, so it allows these commercial banks and investment banks to create instruments which represent a claim on the money supply without any oversight or regulation. And that's supposed to be the task of the Federal Reserve. So we've witnessed the crash of 29 under the Federal Reserve, of course, the S&L panic of the 80s and 90s, and now the meltdown of 2008, and on every ball field in America, George, three strikes, you're out.
You're out of there.
Let's nationalize the Fed the way we did Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Many people don't realize this cartel of banks is completely exempt from all scrutiny by the federal government.
Absolutely. A lot of people, Andy, for years thought the Federal Reserve was part of government. It's
right.
Not.
That's right. I spent the first 15 years of my career fighting that myth. And most recently, however, I made great success by pointing out the fact that the Federal Reserve has 47 Learjets. They have six-figure salaries. They have subsidized dining, bulletproof limos, and a pension package that would make any bureaucrat blush, combined with full medical and dental benefits, a $400 million art collection, and a full-time curator for the private offices inside the Federal Reserve. On top of all this, they're guaranteed a 6% dividend on money that they create out of thin air, and none of this, not one bit of it, is subject to appropriation by Congress. So we should start right there with what Fannie Mae has done to us and Freddie Mac has done to us. We have on our deck a loose cannon in the name of the Federal Reserve that could bankrupt this nation if they're allowed to continue with these policies.
Isn't that the plan, Andy, to break us down, bring us down to our knees, create this one-world government?
Well, you know, we are at that precipice, because if Congress fails to act here and throw this giant tarp over the problem, then we will be faced with a deflationary depression that will break within 7 days. If, however, Congress acts and shores the system up, then we're faced with an inflationary blow-off that will last for 3 years. Now, the latter, I mean, it's like imagine we're in a speeding car heading for the edge of a cliff. We've passed the point of no return, meaning if we slam on the brakes here, we're going to slide and fall over the edge of the cliff. But if we put the pedal to the metal and accelerate, we might get a nice graceful arc that'll keep us running for, you know, 8 to 10 years. And I think this is probably the more likely effect.
Andy, when we come back, we'll take phone calls with you. And also, let's ask you this specific question. If we just merely let it die right now, what'll happen in the future? Well, next hour, Alex Jones joins us for a complete program. But we'll be back in a moment with Andy Goss, and we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to take your calls in just a second here with Andy Goss. Andy, what if we just let it die? Congress says no to the $700 billion bailout. They don't even provide any money. What happens?
Well, I thought we reached that point when last Monday when they said, no, we're not going to bail out Lehman, and then Lehman was allowed to fail. And then AIG, the co-signer for all of these bad loans, they were going to allow AIG to fail. And that would have meant the start of a deflationary depression and what many people have spoke about, you know, the ultimate crash, the dollar implodes, house of cards, you know the routine, mm-hmm. The end of the world as we know it. But I've always thought that from those ashes would arise, you know, the seeds of revolution. People would wake up and realize what happened to them, and then they would get their pitchforks and march on Washington. So I think it's for that very reason that the folks in charge are going to take route B, which is pedal to the metal, you know, shovel $700 billion into the fire. Everyone's money just loses value by 10% instantly. They don't perceive it. They don't figure out what's going on.
They think we're stupid.
Right. And I hate to say it, but, you know, for the most part, Americans do not study this subject. They can tell you who's on Dancing with the Stars. They can't tell you who makes the nation's money. And I'm here to tell you, we don't have $700 billion, folks. It's not just laying in some pile in the president's office and they're going to dole it out. But we're already running $500 trillion deficits, spending more than we take in each year. Our accumulated debt is between 14 and 40 trillion, depending who you believe. And we have a circumstance where there's not enough money to pay all of these debts.
And why the reward for the executives of these failed companies?
You know, this is, what do they call that, a canard?
Mm-hmm.
While we're arguing about that, you know, that will be the one bone that we're throwing. Okay, we're going to stop these guys from taking their bonus unless they turn this thing around.
Yeah.
Please, the real thievery is going to occur right when they're writing those checks out of that $700 billion fund. I will note for the record, we still haven't paid off the Resolution Trust Corporation. I started my career and 10 years into it, wrote my first book, The Secret World of Money.
Mm-hmm.
10 years later, I wrote Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, which just came out in 2003, because the master, they are absolute masters at hiding the obvious. If they tell us that this is a $700 billion problem, then you can bet it's going to cost upwards of $2 trillion. Three times their estimate.
Easy.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Erica in Wichita, Kansas, east of the Rockies. Hi, Erica. Go ahead.
Hey, I am trying to become a more informed consumer because I admit I do not keep up on a lot of this stuff. I don't have any personal money in the stock market at this time, just because I'm trying to pay off some debts and things myself. But I'm just trying to figure out what can I do as a consumer, like, to make smart decisions, and how does this affect me, this whole investment explosion?
Good point. Good and great question. And here are the three worst things that you can do in this environment. And, I mean, hold on to your hats because this is going to – it's different. The worst – number one worst thing that you can do in this environment is save your money. The second worst thing you can do is pay off your debts early. And the third one is to live debt-free. Now, that has to fly in the face of everything we were ever trained.
All right, I'm going to let you explain all three, Andy.
If you save your money, I guarantee you that tomorrow, next week, it's going to be worth less, especially if we're talking about what everyone believes is money, which is, you know, these paper Federal Reserve
notes. Right.
So if you save it, I guarantee you it's going to be worth less as time goes on. So that's you don't want to do that. You want to spend it fast and spend it in deficit.
But keep a little nest egg.
Well, I keep my nest egg in old silver dollars. You know, for me, if I need money, I need emergency money, I'll sell some of my silver dollars. Okay, so that's one. Two, If you're paying off your debts early with dollars that you're earning today, they're very hard to come by relative to how it's going to be in 5 years or 10 years. So you don't want to pay your mortgage early. You're not going to own the house any more or less just because you don't have a mortgage.
Just pay it on time.
Pay it on time. Keep regular. Take the rest of the money, invest it in something more meaningful. And then that third component, live debt-free. My goodness, use debt as a blessing. You know, this is the only way that you can really succeed. If you don't have the money to buy, say, 1,000 silver dollars, then borrow it. Pay interest on it. You know, use debt to help you accumulate the assets that you're inevitably going to need in the future.
What about foolish debt, though, Andy? Go on and buy things you shouldn't buy.
No, sir. And, in fact, you should look at the item you're buying. Hey, should I finance a fruit tree or an orchard? Absolutely. Should I finance a paint sprayer or a tractor that's going to make me more efficient? Absolutely. Should I finance solar panels or wind energy? Sure, go for it. Should I finance a trip to Disneyland? Not a chance. A new couch? No way. A new car? No way. Save that debt for productive and cumulative assets.
First-time caller Rob in Idaho. You're on Coast to Coast with us, Rob.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad you guys have this show, just the one thing. And I just want to talk about what Professor Chomsky calls is the democratic deficit. And we all know that most Americans are against this bailout. I mean, I don't think you could find very many people that are for it. And yet our Congress is all for this, the Democrats and Republicans, and they're just debating the details on this. And then, and in fact, Senator McCain at the Republican National Convention, he was praised for actually going against the majority of Americans and supporting the surge, and he was praised as heroic for doing this. And I just think it's outrageous. Most of Americans are totally against this, and yet our Congress is wanting to bail these companies out, and they're now trying to scare us into doing this. They've made it harder for people to declare bankruptcy. Your callers in previous shows have talked about how she couldn't get welfare because she owned a car. I just wanted to talk about that, and what are your feelings on this?
Well, you know, no one has provided an alternative. Now, I've had my staff on buzzing the phones with anybody that we know in Washington providing the alternative. You know, the Federal Reserve, talk about executives not being able to, or shouldn't being able to take their bonuses and their golden parachutes. The Federal Reserve gets a 6% dividend each bank, guaranteed by law each year. I say we suspend the dividend, number one, at very least. But number two, and most importantly, each year the Federal Reserve spends hundreds of billions of dollars on maintaining its operations and its functions. We should nationalize the Fed. If we're going to solve
what Kennedy wanted to do, and look what happened to him, Andy.
Well, if Mr. Kennedy would have had a nation standing up and saying, no, let's not do this, let's do this instead. Let's nationalize the Fed, put them out of business, in effect, as a private business, the same way that we did Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, I know there's a coalition out there suggesting abolish the Fed. But that would play right into their deflationary depression idea. I have a newsletter at my website, andygoss.com, entitled Let Congress Do It. Give Congress the power to issue money. And you're so right, George. That was exactly what John Kennedy did in the summer of 1963 with the Red Seal United States notes. And he found a way to get money into circulation interest-free.
Yep.
And this $700 billion, make no mistake, is going to cost us $70 billion a year in interest right out of your income tax payments. We're already paying over half of every income tax dollar just to support the interest on this ridiculous pile of debt that the Federal Reserve holds. Let's take them over, folks. Let's gather that Federal Reserve, lock, stock, and Learjets, and move it entirely into the Treasury and make them come to Congress every time they want to spend, you know, $500 million on an office building, or, you know, $20 million on a new Monet.
I bet Paulson and Bernanke are furious that Congress hasn't picked up on their plan, and they're probably trying to figure out a way to do it without a congressional and senatorial vote.
But you can only do those things in the back room. And granted, you know, there are presidential directives, right, that allow for the usurpation of power.
The old executive order, which could come into effect with this.
Indeed it could, because I'm very serious here, folks. We are on the precipice. They by putting AIG in the position of co-signer, everyone has to understand how these credit default swaps work. If you're a hedge fund and you have no assets and triple B credit, and you need to borrow $1 trillion so you can gamble on heating oil futures, you go to AIG and you say, hey, how about co-signing this bond issue for me so that the rating agencies will call me AAA? And AIG has done this for a fee, along with many other insurance companies, for many years. These are called credit default swaps. You're swapping your risk of default to someone with a stronger balance sheet. Well, guess what? If AIG drops their rating, goes to triple B, then all of those bonds that they co-signed suddenly are not eligible for holding in pension funds or by widows and orphans or in teachers' pensions or anything like that. They must be sold. The wave of selling, the avalanche of selling will crush, kill this market dead. And that's what I think they're dealing with right now.
We know what AIG is. Who runs AIG? Who are these players?
You know, this is the most
interesting. Who do they know?
Most interesting point of all, and Ed Griffith would explain it far better than I could. The Creature from Jekyll Island is his book. The Federal Reserve banks are primarily owned by the very banks that you read about in this crisis. So, you know, it's like the puppet master. I can't even describe the system.
It's a club, isn't it, Andy?
Yeah, it is a cartel, and they revolve in and out. You know, Robert Rubin's Mexican bailout plan, he was the former head of Goldman Sachs. This guy's bailout plan, now Paulson, he was the former head of Goldman Sachs. So you look at the revolving door between government and these banks that own and control the Federal Reserve banks, and you'll see the conspiracy, in my view, in plain sight. They operate in quasi-government fashion. They spin off a private corporation called a GSE, a government-sponsored enterprise, and they keep all of the profits separate from the Treasury. If every profitable entity or agency of government was rolled into the Treasury, you could eliminate the income tax.
Has there been a coup and we didn't know about it?
Yes. This is my view that in a coup, you mentioned Kennedy. I think that was a coup d'etat in 1963. Look what happened immediately afterwards, right?
And it hasn't stopped.
We withdrew the United States notes immediately in December of 1963.
They couldn't wait for the body to get cold.
Exactly. And then the following year, we took the silver out of the coins. 5 years later, we closed the gold window. 6 years later, we had the Monetary Decontrol Act of 1980, which said the Fed can turn a paper bag that says, I owe you $1 billion. If you take that paper bag to the Fed, they can print and give you $1 billion for it. That kind of power does not belong in a free republic.
I agree with that. Let's go to Grand Haven, Michigan. John, you're on with Andy Goss. Go ahead.
Hey, Andy, my God, music to my ears, what you're saying about the Federal Reserve. And I really think that, you know, a lot of people need to be educated on the fact that having the Fed in control of our money means our money costs money. And that's called interest. And that's so brilliant. And unfortunately, I don't think people really grasp it or even really aware of that. So
kudos
to you.
I challenge any member of the Federal Reserve to call up George Norrie. Send your best, most talented spokesman anywhere, anytime. I'll debate. I will gladly discuss this issue at the nuts and bolts. And boy, if we don't get to the root of a national scandal in that 2 hour period, I don't know my subject.
They won't go head to head with you, Andy.
Well, one tried. DeLoe Smith, I think he's all over YouTube, you know, stuttering and stammering. The reality is, no. Since 1990, we've issued this open challenge, and we've never been accepted.
Seattle, Washington, Dwayne, west of the Rockies, go.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Here's an idea. Why don't we take this $700 million dollars.
$700 billion.
$700 million. Help the people that are in trouble losing their houses, give them the money. The money goes back into the system, and it helps more than one group of people.
Yep. You know, this is a point I made 6 months ago. When at the time you could pay off every defaulted mortgage in America for $61 billion. Now, the case has gotten much worse, okay? Hold on to your hats. it would now take almost $100 billion to pay off every defaulted mortgage in America.
That's defaulted mortgage.
Defaulted. In other words, they've stopped paying altogether, foreclosed upon, or they're 90 days or more late. That's everyone, and that's not catch their payments up. That's pay their mortgage off. So to suggest that this crisis is the result of some individual homeowners who have failed to make their mortgage payments is baloney. It is the commercial paper issued by the hedge funds and the investment banks that are threatened with default.
Let's go around the corner to Los Angeles. Michael. Go ahead, Michael.
First, a couple of clarifications. This is not a bailout. It is a cover-up.
It's a tarp.
I'll give you that.
Bush threw a $10 trillion party. The American people were not invited. Now he wants them to pay for the bill. And finally, with all this stuff going on, where should we put our money or whatever, people got to remember your number one asset is your health. Your number two is your determination to make your vote count.
Absolutely. You know, Andy, it's almost like a major dinner where they have this grand spread. All of a sudden, you get a phone call from the restaurant, and they said, we need your credit card over the phone. And you say, for what? And they said, well, your buddies just had this great dinner that you didn't get invited to.
Right, and they can't pay for it now. They're in trouble.
Yeah, we want you to.
Yeah, and I love the caller's analogy. Yes, because if you look at the acronym for this plan, it really is TARP. They want to take all of the bad debt instruments in the system, put them in a pile, exchange them for newly, freshly created money to get those guys going again, and cover the whole thing with a tarp.
How did this tippy toe up, Andy? And by that I mean we get these ridiculously high inflated oil prices.
Right.
All of a sudden we get little news that people are having problems with their mortgages. We got a subprime problem. Couple little mortgage companies screwed around.
Well, it was the increase in interest rates, if you recall.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden, bang, the bottom fell out.
Right. Yeah, as Mr. Morgan said, JP, someone asked for a dollar. These obligations, again, were being created by these investment banks without the knowledge of the American people.
Did the Chinese or the Russians or whoever really holds these notes call them in and say, we want our money?
Nah. I keep that chart posted on the website. It keeps increasing. That's not the another one of those canards. The reality is that the Federal Reserve is being forced to monetize ever larger portions of the debt. And this is the inflationary spiral.
And they want us to pay for it.
Yeah. But you're going to pay for it one way or the other. You're either going to pay for it with a deflationary depression that brings you down to 30 cents on the dollar, or you're going to pay for it with inflation, which is the more likely prospect that will reduce your purchasing power, today's dollar, to about 50 cents by 2012.
You know, if they just let the American capital system work without this greed and corruption, It clicks along at a pretty good pace, doesn't it?
Indeed, it does. You know, the separation of commercial investment banks, that was great. The idea of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac used to be part of the government. You know, they were actually a way for the Fed to make the federal government to make money. They were privatized, and then suddenly they start losing money. Well, if the old way of doing things, the rating agencies, when they looked at a hedge fund and said, you guys don't have any assets, get away from us, you can't borrow money. And now suddenly we circumvent the rating agencies by allowing AIG to co-sign on the loan. Well, yeah, that's the kind of stuff, the corruption and subversion of regulation that gets us into trouble. And sure enough, we didn't study our history, our monetary history, and here we are repeating it.
I'm a strong believer in karma, a strong believer in positive energy. This administration has a black cloud over it.
Indeed they do. Indeed they do. And it's going to follow them for a long, long time. I wouldn't want to be near any person in this. And the one good thing for George Bush is that he does get Herbert Hoover off the hook as the worst president ever.
Andy, stay with us in the future. We're going to use you as a resource right here on Coast to Coast AM. When I come right back, it's Alex the Bulldog Jones on Coast to Coast AM.